Steve, I hate to hear this. The leg's still giving you trouble.
Yeah, that's bad timing, I'll tell you. I don't know if anybody's ever had gout, but when it hits its peak, you just can't put any pressure on it at all. So it's it just throbs, and it's not good. I don't know how I'm going to make it there, but I have to. So,
and none of the things that the last time you dealt with it, nothing has really. I mean, are you on the other side of this, or is it?
I've had it for almost 2 weeks now, and I thought it would be maybe start tapering off by then, but it actually is just reaching its peak now. It's actually so in the past, whenever I've had it, I had to be on crutches because you can't put any pressure on. But I don't know. Oh, I'll deal with it tomorrow. I don't want to think about it today.
All right. Hopefully it starts to recede it's one of those things that, like shingles, and it's got its own sort of life of its own. I very, very difficult. I wish you the best. That I know people are so excited because I see them talking about it on the social media platforms.
Well, that's the whole thing. You know, people have signed up for all these tours, and I've got to lead them all, and somehow I have to get around. But first I got to deal with getting to the airport and getting around the airport, not only that, but I mean, the things actually start Saturday. So all day Friday, I've got three breeding farms I'm going to with Mark and Mary Simon. So how am I going to? I got to do that first. And then Thursday, I'm leaving tomorrow because tomorrow Old Friends is having their big, fundraising affair at the castle. And I'm a speaker there. It's about, storytellers. There's a whole panel with Chris McCarron, Rosina Pravnik, Joe Sharp, and a bunch of others. And everybody's just going to be telling stories. So I've got that tomorrow night. I've got to, take care of that. And then all day Friday, I've got three breeding farms that I'm going to with Mark and Mary, and then it starts on Saturday.
Wow!
Yeah, then all the breeding farms start. So I don't know. I have no idea how I'm going to do it. I mean, it's a chore getting up and going to the bathroom. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
if that's a chore, how this is going to work out, I don't know. But it's the type of thing. I mean, you can't back out. People.
No, they're
people
waiting.
Paid a lot of money to sign up for these tours.
Now, you'll just power through it, I'm sure everybody will accommodate with golf carts. At least at the farms, they all have golf carts to zip around. So
yeah, well, I mean, I was offered a wheelchair if I wanted to, and I said no, but I might have to reconsider. I don't know. I'll see what happens in the next couple of days.
Let's take your mind off of it for a few minutes and talk about the weekend and some of the fallout from the weekend, Steve. And I just earlier, about 40 minutes ago, went through the tick list of news for the Classic anyway, with Mongolian Groom participating. The owner is going to pay the $200, not take on a partner. Preservationist retiring off to Airdrie. Tacitus will not participate and take the rest of the year off. Come back as a 4-year-old. Elate, if she's going to the Breeders' Cup, that she seems like she is, looks like she might participate in the Classic. That was the news, and then everything else was on the racetrack, was other divisions. Some thoughts about what we got this week. on that front, and then some of the results.
Well, I mean, the thing with the late is that I'm just not quite sure how to look at her. I just don't know if she's sort of, on the tail end of her career and just starting to slip a little bit, with two losses in a row. And I know she got beat by Midnight Bisou at Saratoga, but she had like a length and a half lead there. And, I'm just surprised the filly of that caliber got beat. I know Midnight Bisou is a tremendous filly. I just basically ignored that race. But then, as I had mentioned, going into Spinster, and again, she ran a good race, but is it a type of race that's going to win her the Classic? So, I mean, you can look at it that way, is that, if she can't beat these fillies, can she beat these colts? On the positive end of it, she is a mile and a quarter filly, and if you want to take a chance that maybe she will improve going a mile and a quarter, which is 3 for 3, then, to me, it doesn't make any sense running into Distaff. I mean, she couldn't beat Midnight Bisou when she had everything her own way, and she couldn't beat Blue Prize when she pretty much, had the race, to win. It was for hers to win or lose, and, she couldn't hold her off. Again, she runs well, but, she's not, she doesn't have that big turn of foot or that blazing speed. She just grinds it out. So that's why she's more effective at a mile and a quarter. But whether she's just good enough anymore to compete with these colts, not that it's a sterling group, but I mean, if I had to do something with her, I would take a shot. I would run into the Classic. I'd say, look, maybe come in a mile and a quarter. Maybe some of these horses don't want to go a mile and a quarter, and maybe she'll move up, and maybe she can get it done. Maybe she can finish second or third in it, which wouldn't be bad. Either, placing in the Classic certainly wouldn't be bad. So, I mean, that's probably the way I would go. But, as far as the Classic, Jimmy Jerkins had told me about Preservationist a few days ago because I had texted him and asked him how he was doing, and he said he's retired. He said the announcement is coming in a few days. So that eliminated him. I mean, I don't know why they retired him, and Jimmy didn't either. He said, it was strictly Centennial's decision to retire him. So, I don't know. I mean, I would have certainly given him another chance. And as far as Tacitus, look, I can understand Judd Money's a 3-year-old, but I still would have given him one more chance, taking the blinkers off. He's had some horrible luck. Most of it was not his own doing. He's run well enough to win a lot of races. I thought he was the best horse in the Belmont Stakes. I thought he ran a tremendous race in the Derby. I thought he was the best horse in the Jim Dandy. And, Bill Mott put the blinkers on him, and he, the last two races he's been keyed up. He's been on the lead, and he doesn't have that. That's not his style. He's a horse that wants to come from off the pace. So I figured, take the blinkers off, bring him to the back of the pack, and hopefully he can get like a run like he put in the Wood Memorial in the Tampa Bay Derby. But Judd Mott doesn't rush their horses, and I trust them to do what's right by the horse. It's easy for me to say I would take the blinkers off and run him, but that's not the way they're going. So we'll lose him, and we'll lose Preservationist, and. I mean, if late doesn't go, I mean, you're looking at a pretty small field. I mean, I try to come up with a classic dozen or even a top 10. It's hard to fill it. I mean, you just don't know who's around. I can't even reach. I think War of Will. I mean, it looks like he'll probably go.
He's
now.
Coming. Yeah, he's running.
Yeah, yeah. So we got him. So at least you got a classic winner in there. And again, we have the question marks with McKenzie, whether he wants to go a mile and a quarter. And, he doesn't have the greatest record this year. He has more seconds than he has wins. So, I mean, he's certainly not a horse you're going to be afraid of. Code of Honor, to me, would be, the horse to beat. You know, he's a 2-mile-and-a-quarter horse, and he's getting good. But he's a 3-year-old. And, you know, if you want to look, if you want to look at the classic run in California, 3-year-olds from the east shipping across country to run in the classic in California are 0-for-22. So it's that easy to do. You have a 3-year-old. And you have to remember is that right after the Jockey Club Gold Cup, Shug made it sound like they're not that interested in the Breeders' Cup. And now they are. So you know, it was a secondary decision. You know, maybe just Will Farish probably, you know, decided, well, we got a horse that's good right now, which he's got a chance to win, let's give it a shot. But not easy shipping to California, but it's a lot harder for a 3-year-old who's already run 3-mile-and-a-quarter races this year. So you're asking him to run a 1.25 for the 4th time this year. So again, I mean, he's a horse you certainly have to be you have to be afraid of. I mean, he's maybe the most legitimate 1.25 horse in the race. Another horse, I think, Higher Power is a horse that's going to be overlooked. I think he's going to be an overlay when classic time comes because of his third. But he stumbled in that race, and Flavian Pratt just said absolutely throw the race out, and he's very confident. And Flavian Pratt really feels he's going to win the classic, and he could. I mean, if he runs back to his Pacific Classic, he certainly could. And again, you have to throw out. He stumbled pretty badly. He was back to last. That's not his style. And the horse that won on the front end, he would have been right up there with him, challenging for the lead had he not stumbled. So you certainly have to give him a shot. After that, I don't know, who are you going to? I mean, who? You know, Mongolian Gloom? I mean, is he going to come back again? It was a big long shot the last time. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, is there a... Can you think of anybody else that can run in the Classic that you really have to feel is a legitimate contender?
Well, the ones you hit, if everybody that's been rumored ends up, McKenzie, let's say Elate, Vino Rosso, Code of Honor, Yoshida.
No, Vino Rosso may be the horse to beat. He has everything right now. He's already won at Santa Anita. He is a 4-year-old that's really getting good. He's peaking right now. And he's a prime example of why you don't retire horses at 3. Because if he had retired at 3, it would have been just an ordinary horse. But I think he's peaking right now. And he did something he has never done before in the Jockey Club Gold Cup and ran a terrific race. And going back out there, I think he might be, again, if you're looking at it as the fact that he's a 4-year-old and the main horse to beat right now is a 3-year-old, if you're looking at Code of Honor as the horse to beat, and if you think McKenzie is not as effective at 1.25, it was McKenzie could win the race. Not going to surprise anybody. You know, he's still a very good horse. But if I had to lay a bet on the race right now and get, you know, somewhat half-decent price, not the favorite, I would probably go to Vino Rosso and think about Higher Power.
I don't disagree at all. And what's interesting, let me read through this list. McKenzie, Elate, Vino Rosso, Code of Honor, Yoshida, Higher Power, Mongolian Groom, Owendale, Seeking the Soul, War of Will, Math Wizard, we're forgetting about Math Wizard, would be 11, and we'll see what happens with Mr. Money. But, 10 to 12. So what's fascinating is you really have legitimate 1.25 players in Higher Power, Code of Honor, Vino Rosso, technically Elate, McKenzie, the favorite may be the most vulnerable of at 10 furlongs. But
I guess you have to look at Yoshida too. I mean, he's won at 1.25 when he's run.
But he's competitive
at 1.25.
Yeah.
But
yes,
you would think you think the way he runs at 1.08 that he wants to go the extra distance. You know, if you watch his 1.08 races, he closes every time. But he doesn't make up a lot of lengths. If you look at the chart of the race, he doesn't make up a lot. He just visually, he looks like he's closing in the race. So I don't know if a horse like that is going to stretch out. you know, his mile and a quarter races. You know, he didn't run badly in the Breeders' Cup Classic last year, and he ran so-so in the Dubai World Cup. You know, he didn't get beat a lot, but, you know, he really didn't fire too much. So I don't know what to make of him at a mile and a quarter. You would think with his style of running, he would be the horse that you want to look at stretching out, but you just don't know.
Now, that's what to me makes it fun, that we've got,
oh, you know, yeah,
we've got legitimate mile and a quarter horses that excel at a mile and a quarter. And yeah, I agree about the Vino Rosso scenario, and that, you know, getting him out there where he's already won is going to makes him that much more attractive. Steve, let's shift gears from the.
What did you say, by the way? Speaking to Soul too. Let's not forget, he finished second in the dirt mile last year. So I'm just wondering, with the last two races he's run, you know, you think, you know, should they, you know, shorten up and go the dirt mile? But it just seems like they are intent on stretching them out and trying to go for the classic. Yeah, I mean, dirt mile could be very tough this year.
Yeah, well, in fact, the sprint too. The sprint and let's actually.
Sprint.
Well, let me ask you about the most bizarre and intriguing potential the classic candidate.
Trust me, by the way, he's not going in the classic.
I know that. But I mean, the fact that he was ready to run well, it doesn't come as a surprise. The fact that he wins that race.
Yeah,
off that layoff is and being unsure about what, you know, about where, you know, distance and what he where he was even going to run Del Mar, Churchill, and then ultimately Santa Anita.
Yeah, I mean, look at all the races he's missed this year.
Yeah,
you know, he's missed an allowance race early in the year because of his quarter crack. He missed the Kentucky Derby because of his trapped epiglottis. Then he misses the Shared Belief Stakes. Then he misses the Yak-Yak Stakes. These are real races he's supposed to run in. It comes back in, like, the least likely spot against the fastest three-year-old in the country who runs a record-breaking 121 buyer figure, the fastest ever by a three-year-old in a sprint race, and a 122 Equibase figure who wins the Amsterdam by 12.5 lengths. We're talking about Chancelot. And Chancelot's the only speed in the race. And he's tracking him the whole way through a half of 44-1. And in the stretch, it looks like, well, okay, well, he's not passing him. He's trying hard and give him good credit. You know, it's going to be an excellent race. And then, like, in the last 50 yards, he just lunges like he just wanted to win. And he just absolutely lunges and wins the race. And if you watch the after the wire, he's five lengths in front on the gallop out. And, I'm sure Mandela, you know, probably told Mike Smith to let him run out a little after the race. You know, just so now it's a question of whether to go in the sprint or the dirt mile. That's the decision that Mandela and Rick Porter are going to have to come to terms with. But I mean, he's the most intriguing horse. I mean, the things he's done. And you have to remember, first of all, here's the horse, by the way. If you look at his buyer numbers have gone up every single race in his entire career.
It came up yesterday. Yep.
Yeah. And then if you look, by the way, he breaks his maiden in the slop by nine lengths, going seven furlongs and 121 flat. And, you know, it was an incredible performance. And then what does he do? He goes, he misses an allowance race that he's going to run in because of a quarter crack. So now he's got to recover from the quarter crack. So he comes back and he works a half from 47.3 and six furlongs and 110.3. And he winds up going into Rebel Stakes, running against who else? A three-time Grade 1 winner and champion in Game Winner. And if you watch that race, go watch him when they're coming to the quarter pole. And Mike Smith is sitting motionless on Omaha Beach, and Joel Rosario on Game Winner is pushing and scrubbing and pushing hard. And he can't make up an inch of ground. And Mike Smith never even goes to the whip. And then when Game Winner comes charging up alongside of him and looked like he was going to run by him, Smith hits Omaha Beach one time left-handed. And he dug in and wouldn't let Game Winner go by. And Smith winds up losing his reins. And he's grabbing onto whatever he can. He's grabbing onto the horse's mane. And he still wins the race. And again, like in the Sandy the Sprint Championship, he's several lengths clear on the gallop out. You know, and he goes back to California, returns to Oaklawn, Arkansas Derby, comes back, beats Improbable. So he single-handedly knocks Bob Baffert's two big Kentucky Derby hopefuls down in all the polls. And so their reputation suffered because they couldn't beat him. And they have to remember, in the Arkansas Derby, who finishes third in the race? Country House, who wants to win in the Kentucky Derby. He beats him by seven lengths and gets a negative two third rev figure. So all you can have to do is imagine, what would this horse would have done in the Derby? What would he have done if he had run in the whole, in the entire Triple Crown? And he's just sort of a freakish type of racehorse. I don't know. I mean, it's just, I think if he goes to the Dirt Mile, I think the two turns in the Dirt Mile would probably be better off for him. But the goal with him is the Pegasus. Now, whether they stop off at the Cigar Mile, I don't know. But the thing about the Dirt Mile is that it is two turns, which sort of cheapens it a little bit. It's not a true mile, but it's probably better for him. Let's say if Mattoli decides to go in the Dirt Mile, when Mattoli hasn't been two turns. So, you know, so you would think that he might not be as effective if he's like a one-turn miler. He's a Met Mile winner, and he's in a sort of race he ran in the forego at seven furlongs. So you got to look and see where Mattoli's going, because as it is, you got to go against Chancelot again and Imperial Hint if you're going to go in a sprint. And if the goal is the Pegasus, do you really want to sprint him again? Is he going to come back with another big effort like that? Yeah, there's always things to consider. And if he goes in a Dirt Mile, what if he draws post 14 when they're starting right on the turn and he's at a big disadvantage? So there's so many things to look at and so many ways to weigh. I know a lot of people on my blog, they want to see him go in a classic, but that's not going to happen.
No, it's not practical. It doesn't make any sense.
No, but he's a very intriguing horse. And you got to remember, Mike Smith, by the way, you know, who rides all of Bob Baffert's big horses, he wins the San Anita Derby for Baffert and goes off the San Anita Derby winner to ride this horse in the Kentucky Derby. You know, so it just shows you how much Mike Smith thinks of this horse. I just find him a fascinating horse. I really do. And we don't know how good this horse really is. He just does things in a freakish way for a horse that really hasn't run that much and hasn't really proven himself. But, you know, for a horse to win a grade one at six furlongs and a grade one at a mile and an eighth, the last horse to do that was Dancing Spree. That was 30 years ago. And Dancing Spree won the mile and a quarter Suburban and the Breeders' Cup Sprint. When the Breeders' Cup Sprint completely fell apart, he came from dead last to win it. So it's not like he was like some great sprinter. He just, he was a distance horse who took advantage of a sprint that fell apart. But the thing about Omaha Beach is that he won a grade one at six furlongs and a grade one at a mile and eighth in the same year, doing all the early running himself, you know, having to run hard both races, not take advantage of any pace scenario. So, like I said, you know, to find a horse that's done that in the same year, you got to go back 30 years. So he's just done things that just stamp him as something very special.
Yeah, it's exciting. And it was so much fun to have Mandela, to let him, you know, to just let him kind of opine and talk about his thought process and how he reacts and, you know, how he approaches things. He's so thoughtful and funny.
Let's not forget the job Mandela has done with that horse. Get him to win this six-furlong race.
It's crazy.
It just shows you, I mean, missing all the races he did, to get him to win this race like that. And by the way, for all the Omaha Beach fans out there, starting tomorrow, Ron Turcotte contacted Rick Porter and for secretariat.com, and for the next 10 days, Omaha Beach's bridle is going to be put on sale on eBay.
Oh, cool.
Excuse me, not his bridle, his halter is going to be on eBay. starting tomorrow. So if anybody wants to bid on it, just go on eBay if you want Omaha Beach's halter. Could be worth a lot. Could be worth a lot more. And you know, the funny thing is that, you know, looking ahead at these farm tours that were going on, is that two of the farms have a connection to Omaha Beach. I mean, one of the farms is Claiborne, with Steins and Sire Warfront, and the other farm we're going to is Spencer Farm, which has the breeding rights after the Pegasus, and it's up to Wayne Hughes to decide whether he wants to keep him in training or not after the Pegasus, or retire him, but he's eventually will stand at Spencer, so we've got two connections to him there, so we'll see. I just want to see this horse get to the Pegasus in really good shape and see what it can do, you know, in a big grade one, rich grade one, going a mile and eighth against, you know, a top field.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they what what assembles as a top field, and then what qualifies as that. But we'll let that play out. Steve, I do want to get your reaction on the 2-year-old scene, because of course, tis the law. You can't even really call it an upset, because he and Greenlight Go were basically, you know, almost the same. They were within 30 cents of each other, and the upset, the you know, the horse that really jumped up, I mean, wasn't impossible on paper, but to win the second start like that, the way Maxfield won for Brendan Walsh, was really quite something. Some thoughts about the 2-year-olds, the Champagne and the Futurity.
Well, you know, you have the four big 2-year-olds, you know, from the different areas. You know, only three are going to go in the Breeders' Cup. But if you take 8 Rings and you take Dennis's Moment, and you take Tis the Law, and you take Maxfield, not only are these four exceptional 2-year-olds, but these are all Derby horses. I mean, they run like Derby horses, they're bred like Derby horses, they look like Derby horses. And I got to tell you, those 2 2-year-old races last weekend were ultra impressed. Maxfield was like, to me, it was like watching a Rossi going by Bertrando. You know, again, I had been touting Governor Morris. And I'm not gonna condemn him for not winning off of 1.5 and a half for a long race, but you know, the horse that ran by him was coming off a 1.6 for a long race.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
a big difference. But if you look at the buyer numbers, I think Maxfield got what, a 64 in his first start. So you look at it and you say, but oh my God, from a visual standpoint, you can see those blue silks. You can see those Godolphin silks flying around the turn. I'm saying, holy cow, look at this horse. I mean, he's absolutely flying. And then when he gets up to Governor Morris, just the way when Arazi got up to Bertrando, everybody was expecting a speed duel. And you know, as Tom Durkin said, Arazi runs right by him. Well, you could have said the exact same thing. Maxfield runs right by him, which is what he did. And he's a gorgeous, big, good-looking, gorgeous horse. And again, bred to run all day. You got to be very, very impressed with this horse. You really do.
I agree.
From a good barn, excellent barn, and Tis the Law, what can you say? I mean, powerhouse of a horse. I mean, everybody, you could see from his first start, you know, even though it was against New York Reds, you know, I think the second horse in that race was like 14 lengths ahead of the third horse, and he got an outrageous speed figure numbers in that race. So everybody knew that he might be something special. But again, he ran right by Greenlight Go, who I have to say I was kind of surprised, and Jimmy Durkin was kind of surprised to see him on the lead. That's, you know, after the Saratoga special, the thing that stamped him as a really good horse was that he showed he can come off the pace, and that, which is what you want to see. And now, you know, he's still going one turn, but you know, that's the second time that Junior Alvarado put one of Jimmy Durkin's horses on. He did the same thing with Preservationist in the Whitney. And I know Jimmy was not too happy about that, and he wasn't too happy about this either. So I was surprised to see him on the lead. It's not easy to win the Champagne on the front end. And, you know, it's a race where you have to run hard the whole way. So, and to give him credit, you know, he had to battle back to get second. So he did it all on his own to get second. So I wouldn't give up on him by any means. I still think he's a classic horse, and I would put him also in that top five. And then you add Scabbard who looks like he's, you know, he wants to go longer, and he's a horse that's just getting better and better. Ran a terrific second to Dennis's Moment. So we have six really, really legitimate 2-year-olds here that all look like they're going to be top-class 3-year-olds.
It's also notable that there seems like a real disparity right now between the boys and the girls. The boy at this time of year, typically fillies are ahead of the boys, and that's not the case this year. The fillies,
no.
And that's not to take away from British Idiom, who won well, and Wicked Whisper, who I thought ran well. Bast,
yeah,
you know, Bast
was
a
superstar though that you haven't mentioned, and watch out for her. Is it Donna Veloci?
Oh yeah, sure, for the calendar.
That,
yeah.
She could be a freak if you watch her race. And she did it all on her own. She went off by 9 lengths. And I know she's coming off a maiden race, but, you know, that's the way racing is now. You know, she's given up a lot in experience, but she could be an absolute freak. So, yeah, we saw some good, some you know, British Idiom looked good. I thought she looked excellent, as a matter of fact, winning the Alcibiades. And, you know, it looks like there's some nice fillies there. Nothing out of the ordinary. We just don't know yet. But Donna Veloci, even though she's behind, she could be out of the ordinary. So I wouldn't watch her get that down like crazy in that race.
Finally, Steve, and I do want to slip something in because I sent you a text on the basis of one of our friends on Twitter. Asking.
I don't have any friends on Twitter. I'm not on Twitter.
One of my friends on Twitter, Allopurinol for the gout. Allopurinol, A-L-L.
I took it this morning.
Okay, all right. So you've started. Is that you just started with it?
I have it, and I took a few, and I've been taking two of them. And there's another one called Colchicine that I've been taking. I was taking that, and it really wasn't doing much. So I started on the allopurinol. So okay. We'll see. Hopefully that'll do it.
He says that's got proven that's a proven result getter. Finally, Steve, your Enable thoughts and Waldgeist.
Listen, I can't hold anything against her. You know, it was Trev all over again. It's very hard to win that third arc. I think the ground was a bit, you know, she can handle soft ground, but I think it was softer. You know, she's got that turn of foot, and she showed it for a brief moment. But I think the ground was probably a little bit too soft for her. And I thought Waldgeist was going to run a big race. I mean, this is his track, his kind of ground. And it's Andre Fobb who always picks these kind of moments to run big. And I thought she ran a gallant race in defeat, and we'll see what they do. They'll see if they retire her, if they try to get, you know, another race in her, or even run her again next year or so. It seems like they're not quite sure yet, but she's still a remarkable filly. You just can't hold this defeat against her, just like you couldn't hold Trev's defeat in her third attempt at the arc against her.
She's
a phenomenal. What she's done, I mean, to win the English Oaks, the Irish Oaks, two King Georges, two Arc de Triomphes, the Yorkshire Oaks, the Eclipse Stakes, unheard of.
Yeah, the way the public responded to is nice. I mean, and Gosden so you know was gracious and it just
he's all class. He's a tremendous trainer. But, you know, for a while there, it looked like she had it. But then you can see Waldgeist coming. And because, you know, the two horses that you look like, you know, she had to put away, you know, she did. Yeah, you know, I mean, Japan and Satsets, who's, you know, who'll probably be a very good 4-year-old next year. He ran a very good race. But, you know, Waldgeist is a tough, hard-knocking horse. She's beaten him a couple of times already. But this was his day.
Steve, it's your day and days and week plus at the Secretariat Festival, and I know it's going to go fine, and you'll get that leg back to working order. We'll talk about it next week. I appreciate
okay.
it. Hang in there.
Thank you. Thanks.
Steve Askin, everybody. And those of you looking forward, he will not let you down. If you're looking forward to being part of the festival tours and the farm visits and getting up close to a stallion that might let you feed him carrots or might take a pinky off. It's hard to know. We'll take a break. We're about 15 in. We got 45 minutes and have got visits with Seth Merrow and Jeremy Plunk. We'll shuffle the deck. We'll see. We might. Seth's listening, I'm sure. Jeremy was going to be freed up at 11. I think we'll get Jeremy in first, and we'll look at the Keeneland action, particularly today, the Jessamine, and some of other supporting action. And then Seth, all right? Stay with us. We'll do some handicapping, more analysis, and I'm about to send out a link to the Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. You know, that meeting yesterday, I haven't had a chance to really talk about this. The presentation yesterday, I almost went down to Maryland for it, but the flight down was a little iffy. So I didn't, there was no guarantee I could get there to do the show on time. But the presentation, 90 minutes, I did mention this already, but I'm going to send you the link if you want to watch it and all the details presented, and you'll understand everything that's going to happen at Laurel and at Pimlico, and Timonium involved. You know, there's going to be, when Laurel is going to be redeveloped, there's going to be racing at Pimlico nonstop for quite a while. I mean, this is one of those scenarios like they had at Aqueduct and Belmont in the late 50s and into the 60s when each track was closed and renovated, and you have to deal with that. But all the details, I'll send out the link to the 90 minutes. Take a break. Jeremy Plunk next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com, use a promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
You better meet your questions. You have to tell no lies. You're always asking what it's all about. Don't listen to my replies. You say to me, I don't talk enough. When I do, I'm a fool. These times I spent, I realize I'm gonna shoot through and leave you. The things you say, your purple prose gives you away. The things you say, you're unbelievable.
Well, two unbelievable weekends of action toward the Breeders' Cup and countdown to the Cup. Jeremy Plonk joins us now. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Steve. I thought you were playing that lead-in music for me. I was getting all proud and boastful and sticking my chest out. The little EMF remake there, unbelievable. So that was very nice of you.
Not at all. And the coverage is going to be unbelievable. That'll include the ExpressBet Breeders' Cup wagering guide. We'll have 14 pieces of analysis, plus from 14 analysts, including me and you and so many others, and then additional input, Eddie O and Brent Musburger, Johnny D. We're going to do everything we can to help players get ready for two of the best days of wagering there are.
Well, with 14 Breeders' Cup divisions, it takes a village to handicap them sometimes, and I think we've emptied the village with all the help we're getting with this ExpressBet Wager Guide. It'll be available the Friday before the Cup, so after the pre-entries come out on Monday, we'll have our early analysis out that Friday, which will be the 25th of October, and then updates throughout the week after all the entries are taken on the beginning of the week on Monday. We'll update the guide throughout the course of the week. A lot of great stats and trends and angles to go along with just the analysis and thought process of the different analysts through the different ExpressBet and XBTV and Stronach Group racetracks and handicappers with some national reputations as well. Joining us yourself, Dick Girardi, and others. It should be a really good guide. I'm looking forward to putting it together, and it knuckles down here in a couple weeks.
You know, we should also include in this, and I'll remind everybody each opportunity with Johnny and with Jeff Siegel, who'll be with us, of course, again Friday, and XBTV, because all of the video analysis and with Millie Ball and with Zoe Cadman and Jeff, but the workout vids, and you know, I know there's some people that will shrug their shoulders and say, I don't care about the works. Those of you that do, to me, it's invaluable, and it helps.
And a real key point with the XBTV coverage is that there's a library to draw from, and you can look at work, say, how did McKenzie come into his last race, and what did that work look like? How does his work look like coming into this race? And we do some side-by-side editing where we show a horse against himself in works, or herself, you know, and to show, here's what they look like when they came into a good or bad effort. Here's what they look like coming into the Breeders' Cup. Plus, we'll have the works, two works out, three works out, not just the race week stuff that you'll see some other places. So, really, that second to last, that next to last work is kind of the key one in today's modern training game. The one race week, you know, the Saturday, Sunday before, is kind of like that last tune-up. It's that 1-2 weeks out that the trainers are really trying to get the best effort out of in today's training techniques. So we'll have all those. There are already a lot of them up on the website. If you go to xbtv.com, there's a link for the Breeders' Cup stuff. Everything's organized by division. Makes it a lot easier. You don't have to go through a bunch of searches and such. And there's already a lot of good content up there. Our buddy Bob Neumeier just got in touch with me yesterday, in fact, and said, you know, let's get cranking on this Breeders' Cup stuff. Where do I find the good works and things like that? And was able to direct him towards that page at XBTV. So get studying. There's a lot to look at. And this year in some of the divisions, we got a lot of question marks. I mean, that's every year in the Breeders' Cup. But the Classic is even more cloudier than ever. And a horse who's just training well up to the Classic may be the right play this year. It may be as much as who's Mr. Right now.
Well, and we'll dive into it increasingly here the next several days, and as these fields are starting to take shape, that getting out in front and getting to know the players. And you said one of the key things that I drive home every year these days, Jeremy, it was one thing when we had seven races and then they added a couple, and you literally going into a Breeders' Cup Saturday, you knew every single horse. You had seen even the Euros when we would order those DVD, or not the DVDs, but the VHS tapes. And you would watch the international races, and you knew, I mean, if it was seven fields of 14, you knew all 98 horses. And now it is so difficult to be as familiar with all the participants. So this is one of the few moments, I love the people that say, oh, don't open it up on after they draw, study long, study wrong. To me, it's just idiotic. The more work you put in, the better you'll do.
Well, and especially in the places where you're not as familiar. Like for me, when I get to the Breeders' Cup, because I follow every single race at Keeneland so closely, and I try to follow the meets that are going to lead into Keeneland as well then so that I'm prepared. Those are kind of my wheelhouse horses, and I feel good about those. So I kind of know where they stand, who's right, who's wrong, who may be coming up to it the best way or the worst way. And so I feel like I'm good there. And so I'll put my study time in some of those other places where I'm not. And I'll just be honest. There'll be some places where I just say, forget about it. You know, there are 14 races. I'm not going to make 14 world-class bets on Breeders' Cup Day or weekend. I'm probably going to make five or six over the 2 days max. So there will be some divisions where, look, it would take a lot of work to get caught up to speed, but this don't feel like you have to, because here's what's going to happen. This is a great lesson. When I first started doing TV research, and we were doing live, in 2003 at the Kentucky Derby, Dan Smith, who was the spotter, who's the person who's on the set with the TV talent, his wife fell ill, and Dan did not make it to the Breeders' Cup or to the Derby that year. And at the last minute, I got thrown into the role of the spotter. I'd been the researcher for 3 years, but I'd never been live spotting. Well, I, overwhelmed myself thinking, okay, I've got to prepare for the scenario of all 20 horses. Whatever happens in this race, I've got to be ready for it, And I didn't rely just on my research. I overdid it. And I got down to the end where, okay, I got, 11 of the horses flushed out, and I still had, 9 to go. And I'm doing an either-or coin flip, okay, who's the next horse I'm going to do? And I even, yelled across the room, and I'm like, okay, everybody, should I take this horse or Funny Side? And everybody said the other horse, and I did the other horse. Well, you know what happens, right? I mean, coming down the stretch, my heart's sinking because Funny Side's going to win the Kentucky Derby, and I don't have the extra preparation for it, and there I am, the live spotter for the NBC telecast. I had information, but I wasn't as prepared for him as I was for 10 or 11 other horses. And the moral to the story is, if you start too late or you try to, overcompensate and do too much, you're going to realize 14 races is too much. You're going to get overloaded. If you try to take all 14 races with the same fervor, you're going to run out of time. Almost everybody will. If you're a professional working in the industry and you can put 80 hours a week into it, maybe you can get through all 14 with the proper study. But my point is, know who you know. You know, if I know Keeneland, if you know the Nyra Circuit, if you know Florida, know the horses that you know best, and then pick a couple of the other spots to really research well. Find yourself five or six good bets. The other ones, maybe take some more traditional handicapping approaches too, or simply sit them out and go to El Paso, as the great Harvey Pack used to say.
And famously said once on an early Breeders' Cup broadcast, which did not sit well at the time.
I had the same thing happen when I was a TV handicapper at Remington Park. I once said, hey, this isn't a very good betting race. You know, I'll sit this one out and come back later. I didn't get back up to the press box before I got called into the general manager's office and said, ha, 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 don't ever say that again on the air. You know, I mean, so you do have to, you know, you do have to be careful in that as a public handicapper. In fact, I just got an interesting tweet from somebody on the Bet Keeneland handle. You know, we promoted, here are the picks for the day, and somebody came back and said, yeah, these touts will never tell you to sit a race out. I tell you all the time not to bet. I just said for the Breeders' Cup, you know, 14 races, you might make five or six bets. I just think that's so important for public handicappers to have the freedom to tell people that you don't have to bet every race. And you'll see in the tweets I do for Bet Keeneland or on Horseplayer Now, I have no opinion on this race. Things like that that will tell you, look, I'm not playing. If I don't specifically say exact the four over the 3-5, I'm telling you I'm not betting the race or I'm not really interested in the race, you know. And so I think people have to realize that public handicappers are in a bit of a tight pickle there. But at the same time, if you know and you trust the public handicapper that you follow, you can learn the ways that they're telling you how to get involved. You know, I'll say something like, tiptoe in the pool, I'm going to get more better races later, or, you know, I've got bigger opinions later, stronger opinions. Those are the kind of things you're looking for. Read your public handicapper, because I think it's important. And you don't want to say that the people are dishonest giving their opinions out, because we're told give a pick for every race, you know. But at the same time, your budget on a 10-race card, you've heard this in night school a million times with me, Steve, on a 10-race card, you should be betting 75% on your budget on two or three races, you know, and the rest of it's nickel-dime plays or sit them out. So scope out a card and, you know, approach it that way. I think it's really important. You should not be making $10 bets with $100. I mean, that's the worst thing you could possibly do.
Well, we'll strategize. We'll offer those kinds of insights and more as we approach. Let's utilize your expertise and your dedicated efforts against the Keeneland meet. How was opening weekend?
Well, one race was really good to me, the Breeders' Maturity Maxfield, and for that, the rest was a struggle. You know, I did not have a good handicapping week, and then you go back and look at the results, and you try to deconstruct the cake, you know, and see what the ingredients were. You look at the stakes races that we had, and, like, every one is a hittable price, right? I mean, you had 10 races, favorites won 1 out of 10, and all the other winners were between 3-1 and 9-1. What the hell more do we want as horse players, right? I mean, you want good quality races with like 8 to 12 to 16 to 18 dollar horses. You know, not the crazy. If they're paying $4 or $40, you got no chance in meets like that. You know, you need these good juicy wheelhouse horses, and they just came in over and over at Keeneland in the stakes rank. You know, I didn't catch enough of them for sure. Maxfield was a good play, but you know, as most horse players will tell you, I could have or I should have done better. Is, you know, I anticipated that Maxfield was going to be below the 12-1 morning line. I thought he would get played a little bit more. He ended up sixth, so I tried to get my money up front and thinking, well, Rushing Falls unbeaten here at Keeneland, you know. So the biggest bet I made for the weekend was the double Rushing Fall to Maxfield. So it didn't work out because she got beat for the first time in five races at Keeneland in stakes company. And so it would have, you know, that would have been a double there, and the amount that we played would have been a weekend maker. It didn't work out that way. So, you know, you come back and you're in on the 6-1 in the next side of it. But that's not enough to kind of get you out and take you over the top after you overspend on the double. So, you know, trials and tribulations and honest handicapping. It wasn't a good weekend for me, but I'm looking forward to this week. And things really changed week 2 through 4 at Keeneland. I mean, we look at, you know, Fall Stars weekend, there were 2 claiming races. There were 3 starter optional claimers. But there were only 5 races for a tag out of 31 offered. I mean, it was all allowance and stakes races and tough 2-year-old maiden specials. It's going to get a little more blue-collar, which means you're going to have more toss-outs and you're going to have more races where you've got a little bit more on the bone to look at than a lot of these 2-year-old maiden races that we saw. So the style of handicapping will change over the next 3 weeks. Now, hopefully the results will improve on my end.
Well, I agree about some of the spots, and it seemed like each day, you know, there was a horse that popped and made you know, made the afternoon. The one on Friday that I was really, it's funny, I struggled on the handicapping front with what to do in the Phoenix, and then ultimately I settled on Engage, and you know, I ended up betting him, and I was delighted.
$20 mutual. We can't argue with that.
Well, the best part about it was that I got everything else about the race wrong, And, you know, betting him, and then this is one of those circumstances where you say to yourself, if you're going to land on a medium priced or even a fairly large sized long shot in a race, you know, a non-favorite, something beyond the probably third choice, fourth choice, fifth choice in that range, you can't bet them, you know, just as an exotic key. That
right.
When they get to that certain, you know, sweet spot price, you got to bet to win. Because if you're wrong about the rest of it, and Whitmore, I didn't really like Whitmore at all coming in here. Whitmore's a horse I rarely get right anyway. But I give Moquette a ton of credit because he's one of the great characters in the game. First of all, he gets credit for that.
Absolutely.
But he's also he's as savvy as they come. But I was screwed immediately when Whitmore finished second. But anyway, I guess the point is, if you find a price, make sure you bet. Neptune Storm was another horse I was right about this weekend and got a win, a really nice win mutual on him. And so, you know, that cleans up a lot of messes in aisle seven.
Yeah, and, you know, people listening might be thinking, well, what's that number? And it's a little different for everybody, but I'll just tell you, for me, flat out, it's 8-1. You know, if I've got a horse 8-1 or more I like, I've got to get invested, you know. And you say, well, why do you make that arbitrary number? Because you got to pick somewhere, right? And if you move that goalpost, then it's kind of like making ABCs for, you know, pick fours and pick fives. Well, if you get the A wrong and the B wrong, it doesn't matter how you put it together. You know, you're like making another level of handicapping, which gives you another chance to make a mistake or to change your mind. So for me, it's 8-1. You know, if I've got a horse 8-1 or more, I want to make sure I get something on them. Less than that, I can stomach the fact that I passed up a $16 horse, a $14 horse, and maybe try for the exotics in some cases. You know, not to say I won't bet a horse that's 4-1 to win or 3-1 to win, absolutely. But if they're 8-1 or more, I can't play them just in the exotics. I've got to get something on the win end. And for me, that's the number I put. And like you were saying with Engage there, you know, if Engage was a horse I would have liked, 9-1 on the mutual there, that certainly would have been a horse that you want to get some win money on.
I'll give you a one that people may or may not remember from Friday, from opening day. And this is one of those morning line, I'm not going to call it a complaint, but when I laid out the plays for that maiden race, the fifth, that started, it didn't start the pick five, actually. I think the pick six started there.
Yeah,
that
right.
Lycan.
Mm-hmm.
Lycan was 6-1. On the line, and I picked Lycan fourth because I thought I like this horse, but not at 6-1. I'm not doing it, and then ended up going off at 20-1.
Yeah.
It was the craziest thing. And granted, you get these full fields and horses from a lot of venues, and you know it's hard to make a line. And there's certain meets where you are going to get horses like this, where it just they slip through the cracks you know, the line maker is way low.
With Lycan, I think part of that was Ingrid Mason. I mean, she had a really big meet here in 2014, and her horses have been bet at Keeneland ever since. You know, the fact that she went on a cold streak for a couple of years did not dissuade the public. I mean, people kept betting Ingrid Mason horses over and over because I remember talking about it like, man, I can't believe they're betting Ingrid Mason this hard again. So as the line maker, when you don't have anything to, you know, go on as far as the public yet, you kind of go in some of their past habits. And I think that's probably, you know, the fact that Ingrid's horses almost always get bet at Keeneland. The fact that, you know, maybe that's why the line
maybe
made it six.
Maybe. And whatever reason, Lycan ends up just being completely ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Then wins well, pays $44. I mean, it was crazy. Anyway, we had a terrific 3 days. It was really entertaining. The turf racing, obviously, whether it was the grade ones or you know, the allowances. And over the next several days, we have plenty of allowance spots. Let's take a few minutes because I do have to get Seth in here too. And let's get a few minutes in, Jeremy, and talk about today, the Jessamine, the last Breeders' Cup win-in-you're-in opportunity.
Yeah, seventh race on an eight-race card, which always makes it interesting because those fourth and fifth races are kind of part of everything. Fifth race today is a swing in every leg of the pick four and the pick five. No matter what you're playing today, multi-race, the fifth race is part of it, and the two favorites are 0-23 on the inside and outside. So it could be a very interesting day for the multi-race wagers if you get beyond those favorites in the fifth. The seventh is a race, the Jessamyn that you talk about, that I think kind of comes down to the logical contenders, and why not? Because this race has been that way. You know, nine of the last 10 years, the horse in the Jessamyn paid 7-2 or less. Favorites have won three of the last four. They've been logical fillies who have run well and ran to their looks on paper. Sweet Melania, Jezebel's Kitten, Indochine. When you line up with Pletcher, Cox, and Brown, with horses who have good form coming off good races, in a race that's played the, you know, a very traditional return, they're drawn well. There's really just, to me, no reason to think that this race won't get beyond the four, the five, and the six in the Jessamyn Stakes. So, you know, in races where you see some prices pop occasionally, in historical terms, maybe I fish a little bit more in those kind of races, but I really think this race goes down to those big three connections, well-drawn, good runners in here. Sweet Melania was my original pick. I give a little lean to the Saratoga horses, but as of getting, you know, I determined in my picks 48 hours in advance because of being printed in the program at Keeneland. But as I've gone through and recorded the podcast today and updated my picks for TV, I'm going to end up going with Jezebel's Kitten. I like the way Brad's horses ran opening weekend and a really good strong finish in that Kentucky Downs Juvenile Phillies. I'm going with Jezebel's Kitten, but 4, 5, 6, I think it's a three deep situation.
Yeah, there's a couple of horses that I do want to bring up as somewhat intriguing. And the first one is right on the rail. Morning Gold. This is one of those spots where mm-hmm. you take a pen and put a line through the Pocahontas.
Right.
Put a line right through it and realize that the horse debuted at Saratoga, going a route of ground, ran very well at a nice price, and gets beat by Sweet Melania. Behind Sweet Melania and Morning Gold was that Lucky Jingle that came back to win.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Morning Gold comes back, breaks the maiden at mid-meet, and I don't blame McPeak. This is a morning line filly out of an Indian Charlie, and don't blame him for trying the dirt with her. And, you know, she got beat soundly. But if you look at those two races that started her career, it puts her on the same trajectory as any of the favorites here.
Yeah. No, you're going to get value there. I know Caton likes this horse. We recorded our preview podcast for each individual race that you can get in the live racing page at Keeneland. And she mentioned Morning Gold, too, is one that she's looking in here at a price. So, and like you said, this is the case of, you know, are you making excuses for horses or are you looking at legitimate cases for throwouts? I think it's a legitimate case for a throwout in this case, you know. So I think you can draw a line through that race to get back on the turf today. Be very curious to see how the turf plays and how the main track plays with a little bit more moisture Sunday and Monday at the beginning of the week. Temperatures are cooled to about 15 degrees in Lexington. You know, that track was very loose and dry on the main track. It was very firm on the turf. I'm wondering if the profile, what we saw opening week, doesn't change a little bit here, where speed does a little bit better on the main track and speed doesn't carry quite as far on the turf course this week. We'll have to see how it plays out. But the good thing with your choice there, Morning Gold, stylistically is the horse has won on the lead and rallied and ran well to run second. So doesn't look to be pace dependent. So you say, oh, you're from the inside, you have to go. It's not at a mile on the turf, mile and 16th on the turf. You know, they can sit and let some other horses cross over if that's what Brian wants to do. He doesn't have to send out of there. It's a straight start at Keeneland. There's no elbow or anything like that at a mile and 16th where he's got a secure position. So his pace versatility could be his best friend or her best friend in this race.
Well, and that's my lean. I do want to point out also at a big price, Take It Back. And this was the McInvale runner that popped at a huge price at Kentucky Downs and then took plenty of money in that on the Churchill undercard at the end of the meet. I don't know if that should be held against this filly. And if she can come back to that effort at Kentucky Downs, she's competitive here. Maybe she didn't want to be on the lead. Maybe the stretch out. I don't want to say the stretch out was an issue, because when a horse runs 6.5 at Kentucky Downs up and down the hill, it's not like running 6.5 on an oval. The 6.5 on that course is a lot more, it's a lot closer to a mile than it is to 6 furlongs. So I don't think it's a question of, and certainly from a breeding standpoint, she's designed to run all day. So I would not abandon, if you bet Take It Back a couple of weeks ago on that card, I think you want to look at her again. I don't think she's hopeless in here.
No, you're going to get closer to that 43-1 in the debut than the 5-1 if you bet her last time. Some faith can be rewarded in that case. But again, you've got to beat Todd Fletcher. You've got to beat Brad Cox. You've got to beat Chad Brown. Not to mention Mark Cassie, who owns these 2-year-old races, just won the Bourbon the other day. We haven't even mentioned Diamond Sparkles, the Warfront in there, who ran fourth, and then the Talman, her first North American start. So, if you're going to win this race and beat like 4 absolute young horse turf heavyweights, like these 4 trainers that are lining up with entries in this race, you got to get rewarded for it. That's part of what made the opening weekend tough, because you're like, wow, I've got to beat all these heavy hitters, and I got 7-1, or I got 8-1. But then when you look back, you say, well, geez, I'm always looking for 7-8-1 shots, So that's why you can say, well, man, this looks so easy in hindsight. But then when you line it up, you say, well, God, if I'm going to beat Todd, Chad, and Brad Cox in the race, I want a lot more than $16 to do it, So it's a... That's why it's Keeneland, man. That's why it's fun. That's why you pull your hair out. That's why you love it and you keep coming back.
Exactly. Let's come back with a couple more spots. What else you like today?
Running with Scissors in race number 3, I think, is one of the key plays today. It will pain me to play this horse, though, because it's Oklahoma, Texas week, and I loathe anything orange, and it's my only 7 horses in the card. And that's not superstitious. That's just bitterness. Running with Scissors will be one of my key plays today in the 3rd. It's one of these multiple condition races where non-winners of 3 lifetime or 3-year-olds. I love when you get a horse who's already beaten the non-winners of 3 condition and is a 3-year-old. It's kind of like a double whammy. You could have got in the race just being a 3-year-old, but you've already outrun the condition and the odd, or the condition set for this race. So I think these multiple condition, dual condition races, if you can kind of read between the lines a little bit, you can come up with some decent ones. So Running with Scissors in race 3-1, I'm definitely looking forward to. I can't wait to see Honest Mischief in race number 6. I mean, that maiden breaker she had, the daughter of Honest Lady and By Into Mischief, the maiden breaker she had during the spring meet with Chad Brown was one of the most impressive maiden races I've seen in my 23 meets covering Keeneland on an everyday basis. And she was phenomenal. She didn't have the summer we expected in New York, but she's back over track. We know she likes. She's got to beat a good one in Air Touch. Todd's got a nice filly in there as well. So Honest Mischief versus Air Touch in race number 6 is going to be a very interesting race for sure. And like I said, that 5th race is, man, it's tough because Life Mission and Hard Count, the 1 and the 10, they look like the 2 top horses in that race in race number 5. But again, they're 0-23 between them. One's 0-12, the other's 0-11 in the major ranks. They look like the right horses, but that 5th race is, you got to get it right today. If you don't get the 5th race right, you're not getting anything today. Your early pick 4, your early pick 5, your late pick 4, your late pick 5, they all run through race number 5. If you don't get that race right and you don't think you can get that race right, people say, well, public handicappers tell you not to bet. If you can't figure out race number 5 today, do not bet the multi-race wagers. Play intra-race bets throughout the day because you got to hit that 5th or you're not cashing any of them.
Well, and these are much like we saw in New York the other day at the end on Sunday, the race we talked about with Andy, where you had that winner that closed out the sequence, that closed out the Empire 6 thing, the jackpot wager, Big Wonder. Big Wonder. That's one of those horses that if you're a serious pick 6 player, $2 pick 6 player, you look at a horse like that, and I mean, you don't necessarily let them beat you, quote unquote, but you say to yourself, God, they're the likelihood when you have 0 for 17 horses and 0 for 8, 9, 10, you know, what they call, you know, career maidens, when you look at them in a sequence, you just, you're smart most times to, you know, lean more heavily on the horses that have upside. But those horses do win, as we saw in that case on Sunday.
Yeah, and we've got big fields earlier in the card today, you know, decent-sized fields early in the card today at Keeneland, which, you know, can really help you when you're putting together the early pick five. I think the early pick five and pick four might be the more attackable ones for me because of I like running with scissors a lot enough to single in race number three. Whereas when I get to that Honest Mischief air touch race, I don't know if I could single there, you know, in race number six. So if I don't have the single on the back half of the card and we've got good enough field sizes where I do have a single in the front half, I think, you look at the way the day sets up and you say, how am I going to attack it? For me, it'll be more early than late.
You know, a couple of things about the card and about a couple of horses. You stress running with scissors, and we do we recall running with scissors from earlier in the career. I do want to send out condolences to the Amos family, and some of you may have seen via Haley on social media. They lost their mom over the weekend, and 93. And it's funny because when we were in New Orleans for Risen Star Week. Was it Risen Star Week or Louisiana Derby Week? I can't remember. Whenever I was there, Risen Star Week. You know, Tom's father had not been doing well, and I didn't realize that the mother was, as old and as aged. So she had 94. I just reached for my note. Best wishes to everybody, and she was a children's book writer, and if you haven't seen the obituary at NOLA.com, and of course Tom's brother, long time, was city editor, managing editor of the Picayune for years, 25 years. The story of how she broke into children's book publishing centers on 2-year-old Tom Amos and a and a terrible two situation, and she wrote about it, and it turned into her first published book and launched her career. And she just reads like she had a remarkable life, and Tom is in our thoughts. Also, those of you that heard Nacho Correas on Monday, Chief of Joy, Jeremy, in that second race. Well, they did some running with scissors around his hind end, and he is no longer a whole horse. He is now a gelding, and Nacho seemed to indicate that should help him. So a very good way to start the week at Keeneland, and we'll also have we got the Franklin Simpson on Friday. No stake tomorrow.
Yeah, Morticia and Company, good field there. And then the Queen Elizabeth II Challenge Cup coming up on Saturday. So really a good second week of stakes coming at Keeneland. Not quite false stars, but Breeders' Cup implications today for sure in the Juvenile Turf Fillies division.
Actually, give a glance. You got a glance for anything tomorrow while we're together? Because Seth is going to join us tomorrow. So I've got another 5 minutes to spend with you.
Keeneland on Thursday, huh? You're going to make me break out the other past performances here.
Yes, make it happen.
That's a little chalk. Shook's got a nice one, Keep Me in the Game, that's going to run in the second. I think
Andrew
it'll be
Rosen.
A single. Yeah, and I think that one will be a potential single in the early pick four and pick five on the Tuesday card on the Thursday card. And, you know, look, race two on the card is a 12-horse turf maiden. I mean, we're used to seeing races one and two at Keeneland in the spring and fall meets being, you know, six, seven-horse fields with 3 to 5 favorites. This week, particularly, some really deep, stronger-type fields to open things up. So if you're that pick four, pick five player that usually waits for the back half of the card thinking it's the better racing and the better opportunities, that may not necessarily be the case. Let's see, what else we got on the fourth? Thursday, the 12 Sweet Addison, I think, for Brendan Walsh on the class drop should be another kind of potential singles. There could be two singles despite being large field sizes. That's another one. That's a 12-horse field of maiden claimers. So in the second and the fourth, you've got full dozen fields but potential singles. So again, don't be, especially in pick five, don't be afraid of singles or short prices. Don't be afraid of a short price in a pick five. That should never scare you off. In a pick four, maybe you get a little more scared using a short price or two in terms of making sure that you get, you know, that kind of big payoff that you're looking for. But you can get a big payoff in a pick five with a short price for sure. Races two and four, I think, are good opportunities on that card. I'm curious to see on Thursday's fifth at Keeneland, the one-horse tune for Graham Motion. This is a first-time U.S. runner getting Lasix. Graham has done really, really
huge record, huge numbers.
With these first-time U.S. horses running in first-level allowance races, I mean, you know, it's kind of like when somebody says, I remember Kenny McPeak this quote, you say, well, how did you know you were going to have a big meet? Because I had conditions open, right? I had maidens, I had A other thans, I had non-winners at two. Those horses fit, and Graham brings these horses over stateside that have that first-level allowance condition in a lot of cases, and Tuned, I think, is a really interesting horse to watch. There's another one. What race was it? I ran into one of my really good stats, and I don't know if it's on the Thursday or the Friday card with Fletcher, but it's an incredible number here. It might be, would that be in the 10th one? Yeah. Todd Fletcher dropping into maiden claimers at Keeneland. He's got Cairo Cutie in the finale, right? You would think, well, Fletcher, why would he run a maiden claimer? These are horses that, you know, they're trying to get rid of them. This isn't something that he's real serious about. 6 for 8 since going back to dirt. 6 for 8 with maiden claimers during the fall meet at Keeneland for Todd Fletcher. When he drops one in for a tag, they win. And I think he's 6 for 8, and the last 6 may have been the winners. I mean, it's a really good number. So Cairo Cutie in the last race, you might think fire sale, damaged goods, stay away from it. It's Fletcher dropping into a maiden claimer. It might actually turn out to be your single in the late pick four and pick five on the Thursday card. So Thursday's last race, the Fletcher horse, Cairo Cutie, might just be a rubber stamp for free space.
Well, and, you know, you did mention the Franklin County, the Buffalo Trace on Friday. It is absolutely stocked, 14-horse field.
Woo!
You mentioned Morticia. How about Oleksandra for Team Valor? And
that's who I ended up taking.
Good.
I had to turn. I had to look ahead and do picks today for Thursday for the printed program, and I went with Oleksandra. I think that she's going to, that's actually the Friday race. Yeah, I did some handicapping on that last night as well. I can't keep my day straight because we got to work so far ahead on this stuff. But I know I look. Oleksandra, I think it's got a closing kick in a race with a ton of speed. You've got that the outside, too, like the 10-11 hole, are really fast in there. You know Morticia's fast. Joel Rosario, this was a good stat. Joel Rosario's got a ridiculously good record in big field turf sprints at Keeneland, like, you know, like the chaos races, you know, full field scrambles. Let me see if I can pull this up real quick. I had it earlier.
He's literally at
Eddie Serling. He's had 6 starts with 12 or more in a turf sprint at Keeneland, 3 wins, a second, and 2/3. He's 6 for 6 in the money, 3 for 6 in the winner's circle. That's full field turf sprints with Joel Rosario. He's on Oleksandra in the 2-hole. See if he can work out a path. I think she's got a shot in there. Favorites have lost the Buffalo Trace 9 years in a row. Why play a short price?
Well, and as Andy has pointed out, he feels that Joel Rosario may be the best turf sprint jockey ever. Goldwood in here, you know, we George Duarte was with us a couple of weeks ago, and streaking Goldwood, 5 straight wins. How about Mac Robertson and you,
the Puckett winner,
sending Hotshot Anna. Very interesting. A tune-up Nick. She's not Breeders' Cup nominated, so this is her Breeders' Cup in this spot.
And I don't know if anybody's faster for a quarter mile than Girls Know Best. I mean, she's just lightning. I mean, she's great. She opens up a length and a half, two lengths in these turf sprints, stakes fields, you know, and including in this race last year. She had a clear length lead into the stretch and got run down. But, you know, she's fast. You know, that good one that you mentioned for Duarte, you know, I always like Alan Goldberg's turf sprinters, and his horses coming out of Colt's Neck, always jumping on him in the stakes races Preakness Week at Pimlico. You know, and Duarte's just kind of picked right up on that with the Colts Next runners being, you know, really good with, what, five wins in a row in turf sprints. You usually expect those horses to be inconsistent, you know, because there's so many factors that can go wrong. It's a short race, you know. To run off five in a row in a turf sprint, that's a really good winning streak.
Well, we hope we get everybody on a winning streak. Jeremy, I appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
All right, I owe Seth Merrill a beer, I guess. I took up all of his time.
No,
but,
it's all right.
Seth, we'll catch you next week.
Well, and Haskin can't join us tomorrow because he was on today, so I subbed Seth in for tomorrow. A couple of notes as we go out. I didn't get a chance. English B did win that Parks Fall Derby yesterday, but I tell you, had to really fight it out with the last zip, the Mike Stidham. Yeah, and by the way, on Monday they ran that I never got a chance to talk about the Fall Oaks. Nay Lady Nay, the No Nay Never filly. For First Row and Hiddenbrook and Chad Brown with Paco Lopez aboard. And those races in Indiana yesterday, the favorite ends up winning. Isn't it always like this? The favorite ends up winning the filly race, Super Gen. That was the Bernie Flint we talked about. But the short price 2-5 favorite, Cash Logistics, was upset by Maters and Taters. Oh, my God. Ron Brown, congratulations, wins the Crown Ambassador. Back with you tomorrow, 9 o'clock, everybody. Have a great day. Good luck.